in it for the kicks back in my day.
I used my existing branding. So the first, I think, three EPs I put out, I just called them the Liquid Adrenaline EP. And it was in reference to the parties that I was already throwing in Toronto at the time. And the third one had Space Invader on it. And, you know, little did I know, but yeah, that record was a hit real quick. And from then I never turned back. I've been 100% into, you know, music producing and touring and being an artist. Like, since then, that song, yeah, really did open the door for me.
Now, how did it go from you signing it to International House Records in and around 1999, 2000, for it to be signed to Defected, which at the time was becoming one of the hottest kind of sort of crossover house labels, in particularly in the UK? But all of those records were feeding back down to places like New Zealand. Like, we got that record and we were just like, wow, what is this? And we were all over it. Could you tell us the story of perhaps, you know, when you made it, how you made it, if you can remember, right up to getting signed and the impact that it had on your particular, you know, your particular DJing production life?
Yeah, it was like I said, I was a promoter at the time throwing raves, and myself and three other friends, they were resident DJs at my parties. We all put in, it was kind of expensive actually. I think we all needed to put in a couple of grand each or something. And we bought a sampler, like at the time, I still have that sampler, the Neemu ESI 3200 sampler. We bought a mixing desk and we bought an Atari with a MIDI output in the back and a little drum machine, a Roland drum machine, and plugged it all in and, you know, fiddled around and, you know, we were meant to all share the studio. It was supposed to be 25% of the time each. And whenever any of the other three guys had the studio, they weren't really productive. They just didn't put in the effort, you know? But when I had it, I took advantage of my time, went crazy, and just made sure I made as much music as I could and learned as much as I could. I quickly made a 6-song album. Through, you know, my connections in the scene, I somehow got that into the hands of Bad Boy Bill. He's like a legendary Chicago house DJ. He was the owner of International House Records. And he basically wanted to sign those records. And I was like, wait, no, they're not good. I'm way better now. I'll give you fresh new material. So I went in and, you know, made the first EP with him, 2 tracks, the second one. I was just, you know, pumping them out. The third, Space Invader, I remember making that, and I was influenced at the time by, you know, that there was just, I would watch the crowds at the parties, and they just loved the buildup. It's like, now every song has a buildup, but at the time, like, not every song had, like, you know, a skyrocketing kind of tension-building kind of part to it, right? And so some of the pioneers in that whole sound were, you know, Josh Wink with Higher State of Consciousness and I Am Ready and, you know, Daft Punk, they were putting out stuff on Roulet Records with, you know, crazy squelchy filtery buildups. So inspired by that, I wanted to make my own, you know, unique kind of riser build tension vibe. And I remember, you know, fiddling in the studio and, you know, creating that LFO, that trademark LFO riser sound, and thinking that it was pretty damn cool, and meeting up with a friend the next day and sitting in the car with him and playing it to him and being like, hey, check this out, what do you think is my new track? And I'll never forget, he was like, I don't know, man, you know, it's a little too over the top, maybe you should toss that one and do some, you know, or maybe at least get rid of that annoying part, you know? And funny enough, that was what everyone remembered about the song, how, like, over the top that part of the song was and how, like, it just skyrocketed, you know? So, I mean, you know, Bad Boy Bill pressed up the records and everyone from Pete Tong, you know, Danny Rampling, the Chemical Brothers, like, Eric Morello, every big DJ was just playing the record. Roger Sanchez, all those guys were on it. So, at that point, about a year after he released it, is when the Chicago label, signed it to Defected Records. And Defected, I believe, got some kind of partnership with Ministry of Sound, so they had a lot of marketing power, and a lot of connections, and they basically took it from, you know, an underground hit and made it like a huge, like mega huge hit. They helped put together a video, you know, and you know, next thing I knew, I was in the UK like so often. I even was on Top of the Pops doing a performance. It was like pretty hilarious though, because that performance, I was just standing, but I didn't even know what the hell I was doing. Really, it happened so quickly. I was just standing behind a keyboard and like fiddling some knobs while like the vocalist Florida John from Basement Jacks was in front, you know, performing and doing his thing. But yeah, just, you know, from a song that, you know, I made, you know, just to try to be over the top, and a friend saying that it would flop, it just so unexpectedly just became that, you know, mega song that still to today, like, people still always talk about it.
Now, you mentioned there, well, you mentioned two things there. One of them was being on Top of the Pops. Do you remember who else was on at the same performance on Top of the Pops? We used to get that in New Zealand. We used to get the UK version in New Zealand as well. Do you remember who the other artists were?
I remember, like, it's a little bit blurred. I remember doing two different TV appearances. The one was the Top of the Pops, and the other was, I don't know, maybe the Pepsi Chart Show or something. And I remember that Usher was, like, at the table, like in the artist room, there was these round tables, and like I was there, and then like Usher was there, and then there was like also some girl band as well, like some UK girl band. So, you know, at the time Usher wasn't like, you know, huge or anything, but another time actually they defected called me, and they were like, all right, you need to fly out to the UK, we got another TV show for you, we're getting you out. And getting out there and, you know, them paying for the flight and being in the hotel. And then, like, the day of the show, they're being like, Jennifer Lopez was on the same show that I was supposed to be on. And she basically booted me off because she needed an extra minute to perform. And her whole, like, dressing room was all, like, covered in, like, crazy white, you know, white curtains everywhere and stuff. So, you know, that the one time I didn't go on too was should have been with J-Lo, hilariously enough.
Have there been any other instances in that kind of vein where you've come across people that perhaps have either been completely different to how you ever perceived them, or perhaps, you know, the opposite way, where you've gone and going, oh, I don't know about this person, and they've turned out to be just absolutely just genuine and amazing people?
You know, I mean, almost everyone I meet in the scene, well, first of all, whenever you meet someone in a club, it's so damn loud and everyone's just smiling and nodding their head. Half the time they're like just mumbling to each other, like, yeah, cool. You shake their hand and you don't even know what the hell. So that's always a good vibe. But I've gotten to know a lot of artists. Generally, everyone's pretty nice. I don't think, you know, anyone's really been, you know, a really bad vibe. I mean, I've really gotten, you know, close with Deadmau5. I mean, when he started in Toronto, he was coming out to all my parties, and I kind of was a big DJ before he was, so he was always circulating there. And, like, to me, he's always been the nicest guy. Maybe his image online isn't, but to me, he's always been great. And, you know, anyone else I can think of, I can't think of anyone who's been a real jerk or anything. I mean, everyone's pretty much pretty cool.
Coming back to Spaced Invader, how did the connection come about to get Slater John to do the vocal?
The song, you know, blew up on its own as an instrumental, and at that point, you know, Defect had signed it, and then, you know, we had a meeting, and, you know, they kind of connected the dots. At the time, they were, you know, tight with Basement Jacks, and, you know, Slater John was just a guy on their radar, and, you know, I had a meeting with him, and we spoke about the lyrics, and, you know, the message, and my whole thing was like, oh, I want it to be, like, all kinds of double meanings, but, like, insinuating some kind of an abduction in a way, you know, whether it's, you know, all in your head or real or whatever. And you know, yeah, Defected connected us, and then, yeah, Slater, next thing you know, we put down the vocals, and then we next thing you know, is again, Defected helped recruit the top remixers of the time, like, you know, Darren Emerson and Ian Pooley and Mr. G and God knows who else, like some drum and bass guys as well. But yeah, a lot of that was smart label work by Defected. I'll definitely give them credit for that.
The other person I think was Olev Baskoski, who remixed it, King Unique.
That's right, Olev Baskoski, yep.
Yeah,
exactly,
he did it as well. That was something that I was going to ask, because it didn't just become kind of a crossover hit, into pop music. Didn't just become a crossover or a big anthem in house music. Jay Magic, his particular remix kind of got its own remix and release by Defected on its own single-sided. Now that was an absolute monster as well for the drum and bass kind of scene. Were you kind of aware of that at the time? Or were you sort of just like, oh wow, this is cool?
Well, it's funny because, I don't know what the true story is behind it, but I remember it just kind of came out behind all of our backs, and I think Jay Magic was in the process of signing an album to Defected of some sort, and in talks with him, and Simon Dunmore gave him the Space Invader samples, and I think that, like, Jay Magic went ahead and on his own, like, pressed up a bunch of vinyls just to give, you know, I mean, drum and bass was huge on dubplate culture and having exclusive tunes, and, you know, at that time, I think he went ahead and made the remix and put it out there. And then, I was hearing it even at my own party, and then it wasn't until, a little bit later I spoke to Defected, and they're like, yeah, we'll come to a deal with him and we'll make him stop, I don't know, pressing them up, or I don't even know, who knows what the real story is. But it was funny because it was kind of like the dopest thing that he did do that, but it was also unauthorized, but I was happy that he did it. But it was also like, you should have asked for permission, or you should have at least told us, And I remember based on that, after that, the Chicago label went ahead and solicited more drum and bass remixes of some of my other stuff, and they even got Total Science and I don't remember a few other drum and bass guys to remix more of my material, and it took on its own form and genre, this kind of sped up disco loopy kind of drum and bass. And it wasn't until a decade later that I actually met Jay Magic face to face. It was pretty funny. I met him in a club in Tokyo, and I don't have any ill will. I'm glad that he did that, but it was also kind of funny. It was a little awkward to be like, hey, I'm Matiris, you're Jay Magic, yeah, you're the guy who did the bootleg, and that's awesome, but you also sold many thousand without telling us, so slap on the wrist, but you're cool, but I don't know,
I used to own a record store in the late 90s right through the kind of the 2000s, and the amount of people that were trying to get a hold of that Jay Magic remix was ridiculous. Just the amount of people that were coming through, it was crazy in this country, because New Zealand's quite a big drum and bass culture as well. We've got a lot of, I guess New Zealand's not really known for too many electronic producers, but most of the big names are drum and bass guys, which is quite
very
is quite
cool. And yeah, I always was big into drum and bass, to be honest. When I threw my parties, my first party in 95, I actually billed myself on the flyers and was billed on some other flyers around town as MC Shadow. And not many people know this, but I was like a drum and bass MC, and I would get up there and put on a little bit of a fake British raga accent, yell about horns and lighters and all that stuff. But that didn't last too long. That I got, as soon as I started making music, it was just house that came out of me. But I was a big into jungle and all that stuff. Still totally respect it.
The first ever electronic music show on Haureki. This is In It For The Kicks, 10 till midnight Friday nights. Radio Haureki.